Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? For the best-selling author of Talking Back to Prozac, Medication Madness, and now Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, it's the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour with guests unafraid to speak the truth about psychiatry and psychology and about how you can make the most of your own life.
And this is Dr. Peter Bregan. Welcome to your hour with me, and as always, a really good, interesting guest, whom I'll get to in a moment. You know, one of the things that's hard about speaking truth to psychiatry, as the Quakers would say, speaking truth to power, is that they got all the money and all the media. And every day across my desk in Ginger's or through our emails or in whatever manner, we find out about some new horrendous psychiatric abuse or misbegotten claim. One of the psychiatric newspapers that goes to psychiatrists throughout America had a headline this week that lithium protects brain cells from harm. Now, this concept has been being batted around now for all the psychiatric drugs because of Petri dish laboratory experiments showing basically that these drugs distort growth and development of cells, isolated cells. And out of that, they have come to try to twist it to say that these may be protecting somehow brain cells from those vicious, toxic disorders like depression and bipolar disorder. And the irony in regard to lithium is particularly horrendous because if there ever was a neurotoxic substance, it's lithium. It was first used as a salt substitute in the early part of the century and killed so many people it was taken off the market. It's very toxic. Patients who stay on lithium lose their, over the years, their cognitive abilities. They can lapse into apathy. They can develop a dreadful syndrome of neurological deterioration. So here we have a blatantly toxic drug being promoted now as protective of brain cells. You can read about how toxic lithium is in my book. The first half of Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal is about how drugs like lithium, all the psychiatric drugs, harm the brain, and the second half is about how to get off them. Now, complete change of subject from the dark to the light. One of the lovely things that happens in reform work and in speaking out of the truth is you get to meet really lovely human beings from around the world. And one of the great delights for me has been to rediscover my Adlerian roots, because I read a lot of Alfred Adler when I was a youngster. Adler was a physician, not a psychiatrist. He was a physician, I think an optometrist, our guests can correct me, an ophthalmologist, eye doc, who for a while partnered with Freud or worked with Freud in some way. He wasn't like a student of Freud, that would be to diminish him, but he was a part of the famous triumvirate of Freud, Jung, and Alfred Adler. But Adler took such a more direct, humane approach to thinking about people compared to the sex and death approach of Freud and the somewhat, I think, airy-fairy spiritual approach, if I can be highly biased, of Jung. Adler said it's all about our social relationships. And if there's anything true in life, it's that we are social animals, beings, creatures, and what we struggle with is the corruption of that, the violence that gets in the way, the inferiority feelings that get in the way, the guilt, shame, and anxiety that get in the way. Well, my reintroduction to my Adlerian roots took place a few years ago, and it's going to reach a new point. I've spoken now several times to the Adlerians of Florida. Now I'm going to be visiting the weekend of September 27th, 28th, and 29th with the South Carolina Adlerian Society in Myrtle Beach. And I'm there by virtue of a really, really fine man who's listening in right now, I hope. Frank, are you there?
I am, Peter.
His name is Frank Walton. Frank has one of those lives that you just can't summarize. But he's been a leader for a long, long time in the Adlerian movement in America. He studied with probably the key person, Rudolf Dreikers, in spreading. He came to America from Europe and spreading the word here about the Adlerian viewpoint. I was reading about it in college. I just stumbled on a great book by Ansbacher and Ansbacher, The Individual Psychology of Alfred Adler. I was reading them when I was 18, 19, 20 years old in college. Frank is seen as a really just wonderful counselor, therapist, by those who know him, and folks like me who have seen him work on stage at Adlerian meetings. We've met, and I've admired what he does. He writes. He's the co-author of Winning Children Over. It's a manual for teachers, counselors, principals, and parents. And that book was distributed to 28,000 teachers in Chicago. I mean, what an amazing thing. He's author of a very widely selling booklet, Winning Teenagers Over in the Home and School. Something I'm deeply jealous of. His books have been published in 13 languages. Frank, every time somebody tries to translate one of my books, the local psychiatrist tells them it's going to ruin psychiatry in whatever country it's in.
Is that right?
He's done DVDs. He's got just lots of good things going, and he's running the conference in South Carolina, in Columbia, in Myrtle Beach, rather. He works out of Columbia. If you want to see Frank, he's a psychologist. He works out of Columbia. Frank, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you, Peter.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. But listen, start wherever you would like. Start with how you developed as a psychologist and found your way to where you are, or whatever else is on your mind.
Well, thanks. It's interesting to hear you speak of Dr. Rudolf Dreikers, who was a psychiatrist in Chicago. But he came after he left Austria with his mentor and colleague Adler. And the good news for me was that I ran into Dreikers at a conference and saw him working with a family. Now, I was already a young PhD. Fortunately, I was a practitioner, Peter. I was associate director of the Counseling Center at the University of South Carolina, and I also taught some, but primarily I was a practitioner. And I say fortunately because when you put your ideas to the test and what you've learned to the test and you find out, well, whether they work or they don't, and I realized I ought to be able to understand behavior better than I seem to be able to. And when I saw Dr. Dreikers, then I realized I wanted to go to Chicago and study with him, and I did for 2 summers, which was terribly valuable for me. And then I began to teach it to mental health workers in our state. I did that for 18 summers, and after a few years, I left the university to go into private practice. But to make it brief, I would say what good fortune it was to run into Dreikers and to be able to be exposed to Ansbacher, who was a colleague, a colleague much older than me, of course, but I saw him as a colleague. He invited me to Vermont to teach with him and his wife, Rowena. So much of my growth has been by being working to spread the ideas in my own state first, and then working in the national organization, and then be invited to speak here and there, and then finally to the International Adlerian Summer Institute, which has permitted me to get connected with folks in other countries and And so you spoke about the translation of some of my publications, and what has happened is that when people ask, when they may come to my course in the International Summer Institute, which is in a different country every summer, two-week institute, but then if they invite me, and then subsequently often they ask, do you mind if we translate this into our language, and it's always been to me a gift to give that to the people of, especially in Eastern and Central Europe, where people didn't have two nickels to rub together, but they were working to bring new ideas and new principles, and then subsequently new techniques to their work. So that's been a great pleasure to me.
Frank, talk about you said principles, ideas, techniques. Let's talk about what is the heart, from your viewpoint, of the Adlerian, Alfred Adler's contribution. What's the heart of it? What makes it moving to you?
Well, let me mention a couple of things. Well, if you say the heart, singular, I would say the keystone is that Adler taught us that we have the capacity to develop social interest. We're not born with a sense of caring about fellow human beings, a sense of community, caring or connectiveness. We're not born with it, but we all can develop it. And when we can raise our children, or ourselves for that matter, later on, or our patients, when we can help them to feel a sense of connectedness to fellow human beings, it greatly decreases the likelihood of poor mental health, or for that matter, with young people, misbehavior. And so we a lot of the problems that we see are brought about because of a underdeveloped sense of caring about fellow human beings. And that's, if you said, what's number one, that certainly would be true. And let me clarify for listeners by saying, if you feel connected to fellow human beings, it's hard to mistreat them. It's not impossible, but it's difficult. And so what we'd like to do, of course, is to raise folks who care about others in their family, others in their kindergarten class, others on the soccer team or in their high school, and so that as they move along, more and more, as they make decisions about the problems that they face, they do it with a view towards not only what's in it for me, but how can I deal with this in a way that's a help to me and other folks who will be influenced. So, Peter, that certainly there are others, but that's number one.
Yeah, I think it's number one from my understanding, too. And it was interesting when I started meeting Adlerians again, or maybe for the first time, and I went back and I said, well, gee, let me see, what do I have in my library? What did I read? I'd read about six of his books. And it underlined them. In addition to the Ansbacher and Ansbacher symposia, collection. So I thought a lot about these things. Learned a lot from Adler, and then wasn't sure where I got a lot of things from later on. But some of it was from Adler. And I speak of empathy and love, and when I talk to Adlerians, they immediately feel, well, that's, you're talking about the same thing as social interest. And I think you would agree with that, wouldn't you?
No question about it. No question about it. When I felt such a connection to you, when I began to listen to you, read, but especially to see you talk and operate with fellow human beings, then I knew that we were kinfolks.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's been just lovely to watch you and get to know you, too. Now, you said that Adler believed that we weren't necessarily born with this, but we could develop it. But certainly from evolutionary viewpoint, being social is what we became, so that it is built into us profoundly, into our fabric, that we are either social or we don't exist. I mean, literally, we either become socialized by other human beings when we're these helpless little infants, or we die. So from the beginning, we're all about our social relationships. And
well, surely, and that's why we are Adlerians are prone to say all problems are social problems, and we can't. It's not helpful to examine them outside of the context in which they exist. So we have become, I say we because I feel so connected and really in many ways dependent upon hundreds of other colleagues through the years, but we have tried to be more and more specific in terms of how to do this. And of course, for example, working with a family, we would like so much to look at the specific pattern of interaction in a family so that we can see what happens on a minute-by-minute or an hour-by-hour basis as far as we can reconstruct that in our office, and then get a sense of the sense of community feeling, social interest, empathy, or the lack of it. And Kurt Adler, who practiced in New York City and is a psychiatrist and was Alfred Adler's only son, he said the most powerful thing we have to offer our clients is to help them see more clearly what they are up to. Because, of course, we think of behavior as goal-directed, and we're so often trying to help our patients see what are they trying to accomplish, even though they may not realize it so clearly at a conscious level. And the more often that they sense themselves to be in a position of inferiority, to be below others that are important to them, others in the social group, the more likely that behavior, instead of being directed towards helping the gang, helping us, helping the family, more likely it is directed in some mistaken or even selfish ways to compensate for the sense of being below my brother, below others in the school, whatever it may be, others in the workplace. So we're looking for anything that could smack of superiority, inferiority relationships between parents and children, parents and parents, wherever it may be. And then to see, once we spot that and we realize nobody's going to stand for that, no one wishes to be or even will stand to be in a position of inferiority, that's a clue. We examine it more closely and then see, well, what did he do about it? Well, he's doing badly in school, or he's punishing his wife, or he's acting in some bizarre way to excuse himself from being being seen as a failure on the common tasks that face us all. And anyway, those are just some of the thoughts that come to mind, Peter.
Yeah, I was very struck by the sense of how he could look right at superiority feelings and say that's really coming from inferiority feelings, from social inadequacy feelings, and to build an egalitarian principle on it. One thing that just enormously surprised me when I went back and started to reread Adler was what an advanced feminist he was. I mean, he wrote a book on equality between the sexes, which is spot on, and I'm forgetting now when it was written, but it had to have been the 1920s, maybe. Do you remember, Frank?
Well, I don't remember the date, but I would say the late 20s.
Yeah. Powerful, powerful, uncompromising statement that male superiority had to end, that it had no place in relationships. Very profound and no compromise about it, and it came right out of this sense that he has that human beings are equal.
So, of course, it's kind of, in a way, kind of amusing but important to say, in contrast to the Freudians at the time, who focused on penis envy, that women had some difficulties because of envy of not having a penis. And Nadler said, a lot women care about not having a penis. What they want is equality, for Lord's sake.
Yes, I mean, he just saw through all of that in a very, very profound way. I mean, he doesn't talk a lot about internal psychology, but in a way he does, because he talks about things like inferiority driving people. But I don't think it was his preoccupation. His preoccupation was really helping people to be cooperative and social.
That's so, and he was so good about bringing it out to the common man and woman and giving it away. There were was a time when he had 18 guidance centers around Austria, and in those centers, he would teach about the some techniques that could help to bring about cooperative living and responsibility in kids, and then he would work with the family in front of the group, and that would be the ongoing. You might say itinerary, that each week someone from the group would come up and talk with them, and so many people could learn at once. And they also he liked to focus on the fact that, not to be discouraged by the fact that you're having some problems when you're in these groups, and you see, my gosh, my family is wrestling with this same kind of thing, and it's really an encouraging experience to sense that.
I hope that at the upcoming meetings, which again are going to be at Myrtle Beach in South Carolina, the weekend of the 27th, 28th, 29th, I'll be doing a presentation of some length on Saturday morning September 28th. So
you surely will. We're thrilled, and of course, I'd like the listeners to know that Dr. Bregan is our keynote presenter, and we have asked him not to speak just for 45 minutes or so. We've got you for 2 hours to talk about drug-free therapy, including ADHD, and then. We have another hour and 15 minutes after a break where people can involve in dialogue with Peter. So that's the highlight of our conference, September 27th, 28th, and 29th. But we have presenters from 10 states and 4 countries. Folks come regularly, a lot of them. Because they like the atmosphere. People tend to, I guess it shouldn't be surprising, people tend to live what they believe, and so you find an atmosphere that's different from many conferences. It's a nice sense of collegiality.
It's a very warm and caring environment, and even though it's coming from a specific philosophical base, it's very welcoming to anyone who basically wants to bring a positive approach, a positive social approach to life. I hope at the conference that you'll do one of these family seminars. We get up there with the family and work together with them, with the group. Any chance of that?
I will. On Friday, we have 6 full-day workshops, and I'll do one of them, and in the morning we'll talk about family counseling and family life, and I will have a family, of course, learning from Adler and Dreikers. We like to teach by demonstrating, so I'll have a real-life demonstration with a family in the morning, and in this particular day, in the afternoon, I'm going to do individual counseling, so I'll demonstrate an initial counseling session with an adult. So those are the two things I'm doing that Friday. But we have topics on the task of intimacy and Jim Holder, who has been the national leader in inpatient substance abuse services. It will do a full-day workshop on sobriety enhancement strategies, He is a gem, and we always like to do an introductory course, workshop. So Dr. John Arnold will spend a day talking about the principles, the basics, and so those are just a few of the things on Friday. And then in addition to what you're doing, Peter, on Saturday, there's 14 other short presentations that people can only choose. I think each 75 minutes there are four, so they people can choose one different one every 75 minutes. But of course, Dr. Bregan's kicking the whole day off, and then we have another half a day where people can study one subject, one topic for 4 hours. And one is lifestyle, which if you read Adlerian psychology, you know we're very much interested in the holistic principle, and that is, what is the style that a human being has decided is helpful to use to approach the problems of life? And, of course, that style takes us to our successes, takes us to our difficulties. It's based on conclusions that we draw from at least birth, looking around, and some of those conclusions are mistaken, of course, but nevertheless, we use it. So there'll be 4 hours on that, and Dr. John Neubauer is coming down from Fort Wayne, Indiana, to talk about treatment of sexual abusers. And in the afternoon, or no, this is all day, there's also couples counseling and several others, but it can be seen, Peter, if I may say, the website of the South Carolina group is www.adleriansc.org. Adleriansc.org. And on that website, one can see everything that's offered and can actually register online if they choose to. And I'll just add, you could tell this is our 31st conference, and I think it's really an act of love. We do some really valuable things for people, but it's also a great pleasure in that everyone has a room with a view of the Atlantic Ocean. The hotel's right on the coast there in the south part of Myrtle Beach, and it's a moderately expensive, most of the meals are cafeteria style right next to the meeting room, and we build in recreational things in the evening, social things if people care to join us. So that in a nutshell is our 31st South Carolina Conference of Adlerian Psychology.
I'm really, really looking forward to it. It'll be the first time that I've had a conference with you, and I haven't been in South Carolina in a long time. I want to remind people that we decided not to do an empathic therapy conference this year, mainly because there were other priorities that Ginger wanted to catch up on this year. But I'm going to be, somewhat showcased and certainly readily available at a number of conferences instead over the next 2 or 3 years. And we try to get them up on the board on my website, Bregan.com. Don't always do the best job. The next one after Frank's will be the R.D. Lang in the 21st Century Conference in Wagner College in Staten Island. That's going to be October 6th. So, and we'll have Michael Thompson, who's organizing that conference, give a talk on our show too. Let him talk about it. Frank, we're going to go to break in a minute. I didn't ask you this in advance, but maybe you could think about it in the break. I'd love to have you describe in a little detail, even if you sort of make it up as you go along, a person's lifestyle, how someone has a lifestyle, how it promotes their life, how it doesn't promote their life, how you might give them a little nudge in a family therapy or in another setting, to become more socially positive in their lifestyle. Could you do that when we come back?
I could. I'd like to give it a try very much, Peter.
Good. Well, we'll go to break now. I'm talking with Frank Walton, psychologist in Columbia, South Carolina, and we've also been discussing the South Carolina meetings that we're going to have in Myrtle Beach. We'll go to break, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Very good.
You're listening to PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
The Progressive Radio Network has reached a great new milestone, and we'd like to thank all of our listeners for making us Zeno Radio's top broadcaster. With over 4 million minutes on Zeno's phone listening service, we have broken their records and our own. So from all of us at PRN, thank you for helping us to move forward.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to invite you to listen to Warrior Connection on the Progressive Radio Network. Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we're doing the best we can for the veterans of our nation. Warrior Connection is an ongoing discussion with veterans, scientists, politicians, journalists, reporters, and doctors about the health and environmental effects of war on our nation's veterans. Our purpose is to provide the information necessary for all veterans to lead a productive life. Thank you very much, and God bless America.
Hi there, this is Harvey Wasserman. I am the host of the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show, which airs every Monday at 3 p.m. at PRN.FM. We cover the great issues of your health and wellness, of the health and wellness of the planet, of moving ahead towards a Solartopian, green-powered, holistic Earth. Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
This is PRN, for the Progressive Radio Network.
And this is Dr. Peter Breggin. Welcome back. My guest, Frank Walton, psychologist, Columbia, South Carolina, a leading figure for decades in the Adlerian movement. Frank, do you have a particular book of yours that's in print and available you'd like to recommend?
Well, I have Winning Teenagers Over, and you mentioned Winning Children Over, and those are available in a variety of places, but right now probably best on my website, which is drfrankwalton.com, Dr. Frank Walton. I say doctor, I mean drfrankwalton.com. But I do also some DVDs through the years, and one of those that I'm pleased about its impact was it has to do with five live illustrations of a technique, Peter, that actually you've seen me use. I call the most memorable observation.
Talk about that a bit.
Okay, it occurred to me some years ago that when we move into early teens, it seems very common for we human beings to draw a conclusion about life in our family. That just that we look around and make a generalization, and sometimes it's positive, which is to say, I really like this about life in my family. A little more often, probably it's negative. They look around their family and say, wow, this is distasteful. I really don't like this. In any case, it seems to be in a very important part of their lifestyle. It's only one part. But it has to do so often, not only, but so often has to do with the style of parenting they choose. And I can perhaps do this best by using the example of with one father who told me when I asked him for his most memorable observation, he said, sure, I can remember. He said, you see, I came from a large family. And it seemed as though my family had time for everybody in the family except me. And I promised myself when I got to be an adult, I would never let that happen. Well, Okay, so there's the conclusion. I would not be a good father if I was neglectful of my child. That can be a wholesome idea, a helpful idea, but trouble is people tend to overdo it. And he so much overcompensated that his child, his six-year-old child, was practically unfit for social interaction because he hovered over her. And when she went off to kindergarten and off to school, she was accustomed to having 89% of the attention in any social gathering. And, of course, it didn't work in school. This was actually a man and woman whose child was judged the worst into school. That's why they were there to see me, and also diagnosed with ADHD. But this father said, you see, my parents were seldom there, and they left me in the hands of a babysitter, and that babysitter was my brother. And as it turned out, his brother was 8 years older than him. And he looked at me with fire in his eyes, Peter, and he said, and he beat me every day. Now, again, we have the freedom to choose what we will make of every experience we face in life, which is a wonderful, wonderful capacity for we human beings. But he could have chosen something more positive, such as, I will never seek to overpower one of my children. But he didn't. Somehow he didn't have the good sense or the courage. And in any case, the conclusion that he drew is, someday I'll be in charge, by golly, and then I will tell others what they will do. And, of course, the kid would fight him at every turn. So, but the important thing I'm sticking with is, it's a technique. It's only one technique that I use in the midst of others, but it's a powerful technique that can help the therapist to help the client or patient see and understand what he's guarding against. So if a patient were to tell you something negative, then it's clear what he's guarding against. It says, I'm not going to let that happen in my family. It's a little bit more difficult when they tell you something positive, because what they're guarding against is the absence of the positive thing. So, for example, a common one would be, my mother was always there for me. Okay, that could be construed as very positive, except that the conclusion may be put into practice with the parent thinking, I would not be a worthwhile mother or father if I was not always there for my kid. And they can put it into practice in such a way that they steal away the confidence and the opportunity to learn to kids to stand on their feet and then to learn to connect with fellow human beings. But anyway, that's just a couple of examples of the most memorable observation. And people can gain. I have seen how quickly people can gain, even without a therapist sometimes, just by looking at, when I was 11 or 12, and I looked around my own family of origin, what conclusion did I draw? And was it positive or was it negative? And so that's the way we would approach helping people to tell us that conclusion, and then for the therapist to help them to interpret, to see what would this mean in their private logic that may lead them to guard against some negative thing, or in terms of Adlerian language, some position of inferiority which they guard against.
That's a marvelous description. I think that this is central to any good psychotherapy, this idea that children are living beings who make choices, who deal with good and bad experiences in their own unique way, come to their own conclusions, and that those conclusions come to an early age aren't necessarily going to work when they get out of childhood. One of the things I like to tell my patients or clients is that Listen, that was an important decision for you then. You may have decided, may have given you some self-esteem, some sense of value to say, I can't wait till I'm big and powerful. I really understand how that was what kept you going when you were being beaten up. But you can surely see it doesn't work. You can surely see that you don't want to make other people suffer the way you did. And people will get it. They'll see that these conclusions were wrong. But you have to address therapy and the person in therapy as a sentient being, not a biochemical imbalance, and not somebody who's been caused by their childhood, not environmental determinism either. And it's another great contribution so early on of Adler was to see that that kids made choices and could be reasoned with. One of the things he said, Frank, that I just marked up and circled way back when was that he never met a child he couldn't reason with, except for imbeciles or something like that, whatever the word was for at the time, people who were utterly destroyed, that he never met a child he couldn't reason with. And that's what you're describing doing with the older, with the adult, but also with the child, is reasoning with them about what their viewpoint is, what decisions they've made, whether they really work. Does that make sense?
It sure does. And people feel, young people even, I agree, people feel encouraged when they feel understood. They didn't even expect it. They came because their parents wanted them to come or whatever, and they find out this person can offer some ideas about how they feel and what they feel it's important to do, even if it is to punish their mother. And to be able, for that young fellow or girl to smile, to see the corners of their mouth go up and say, how in the world did you know that? I didn't even know that. You know?
Yeah.
But I also wanted to comment on when you see the conclusion that the person has made, whatever aspect of their private logic, but here, what you and I are talking about, it is, I try to help them see that it's good sense that you did not want to be in a neglected, if that's what it was, and you didn't want other people to neglect it. I talk about the positive side of it. So because that's encouraging to people, and there's a lot of times they make their contribution outside of the home with some aspect of that, that caring and that wishing to avoid people being placed in an underdog situation. It's just that with their own child, we need to point out how it's making trouble, and not in a moral way, of course, not in a way that would. We need to obviously do it in a kind way so that we're on a level. If we're preaching the importance of being on a level, or we're teaching the importance of being on a level, of course, it's terribly important that we be on a level with our clients.
It sounds like Adler's focus was a lot on what I would call the shame issues, inferiority, superiority, power. Freud, I think, was a lot more interested in guilt, you know, because that's probably what he worked with in himself, inside himself, which is, being a powerful person who does bad things rather than a person who feels inferior and wants to have power. I mean, the guilt model speaks more to the feeling of I'm just not a good person compared to other people. I'm a bad person. I need to be a good person. Did I ever talk at all about that? I don't know enough about it to know.
He did in some interesting ways. I have some comments I could make about that. We're not interested when we see a person is, let's call it, misbehavior or behaving in some ways that could be carry a diagnosis of something or other. But okay, so they are behaving in this way, and they feel some guilt about it. Of course, Adler and Dreikers would say, well, misbehave or feel guilty, but don't do both. In other words, if you're going to misbehave, you just accept that's what you want to do. You know, you want to punish your wife when you feel neglected. You know, now you tell me you're feeling badly about it. You know, that of course is an effort to elevate ourselves. We would try to always help people see what they are up to. That what a good person I am. Only a good person would feel so badly about what I'm doing. You know, so it's, you can get people to smile with that, but it's absolutely true. You know. Except there is that guilt that is helpful, of course, that we experience and we say, I don't like behavior like that. That's not the kind of man I want to be. And so we change. Now, that's not troublesome guilt, but the guilt
it's
we
remorse.
Carry with us.
I would call that remorse and leave guilt to the irrational part of it myself.
Uh-huh. Well, so that can be helpful. And you mentioned earlier, before the break, Peter, about speaking about lifestyle formulation,
yes.
Which in a way we have here, but I could take 3 or 4 minutes and
please
offer that a little bit. Usually we do this approach with that I'm going to speak of with adults or older teenagers, although everyone has a lifestyle. So this is capitalizing, making use of the holistic principle that there is more than we are more than the sum of our parts. There is what we bring to our life and the environment, and then there is the very important conclusion: what did we make of it? So that whatever we make of it is the conclusions that are our personal roadmap for approaching life. So that maybe I conclude that women are this way, the world is that way. There's so many infinite number of conclusions that you can begin to see as you look at the environment when a person lived, and of course by asking some early memories is also helpful. But at any rate, what I would say to a client often in the first session, very regularly, when they talk about their presenting problem, but then I would, in order to be respectful and help them know what I have to offer and how I think behavior works, I would be inclined to say, Jim, I don't know how it is to be in your shoes, but there's probably nobody in the world quite like you or me or anybody else. But with your help, and I'll ask you some questions, and I'll draw some conclusions, and if I'm on the right track, you'll be able to tell me, that's true, I do have that idea, or that does sound like me. And, of course, we ask for usually 5 or 6 early memories along the way, and use your, as you've trained yourself to think holistically, as you see pieces of information that fit together, the good counselor or therapist can pull those together and offer a conclusion. You may be wrong, but when we make a guess, you learn something. Either you're right or you're wrong. If you don't make any guess, you don't learn anything. So Adlerians tend to offer hypotheses in which the client hopefully will, in a partnership, will keep us on the right track. And then as we've established, not 27 or 42 conclusions, but usually 5 or 6 important ideas that a person uses to solve problems as he approaches them. And then we want to be good at having carefully recorded the presenting problem or problems to be able to say, isn't it reasonable that when you have these aspects of your private logic and you rely on them to solve problems, that you would get yourself into this kind of problem that you find yourself in? And so we need to tie the ideas into the mistake so that the person can begin to smile or be encouraged and say, wait a minute, it's not that I'm bad. It's not that something's wrong with me. It's just that I carry with me some ideas that are not helping me and are mistaken in some ways. So then, Peter, most of us it's not so different from other therapies, I suppose, but most of us would be inclined, after we have some acknowledgement, after the disclosure where the people say, that's true, that's important to me, to go and find themselves making that putting those ideas into effect in a troublesome way in the next few days or whatever, and then come back and be able to say, you know, I was in the midst of an argument and I remembered what we said and I had to laugh, and it really was a help to me. Or wherever we could help them, wherever they could help themselves to spot some use of their ideas. But also one more thing I would mention is so important to say, to help people know how their style takes them to their successes, because it's the same style that takes us to our successes that takes us to our difficulties, and we certainly don't want to make short shrift of the good things about the ideas they carry with them, but only to help them to focus on and modify where it's getting them into trouble.
There's such a cognitive aspect to Adlerian therapy. It's interesting that, you know, the emphasis is social, and the therapy originally was done in this social setting of the public seminar, a lot of it. But it's very, very cognitive. How much conscious emphasis in training and practice do Adlerians put on their personal relationship, what I would call rapport or the relationship with the client?
Well,
obviously, it's got to be important.
Yeah, it is, and I'm probably not doing justice to it. I'm glad you pointed it out, because, first of all, if we know superiority inferiority relationships are troublesome, then we better, by golly, not introduce them into our relationship with our patients or clients. Now,
Frank, I want to cheer when you say that. It's so incredibly important. So incredibly important.
Well,
go ahead.
It is, and to be humor is very valuable. Even sometimes self-deprecating humor about my, you know, you talk about yourself and mistakes you may make or whatever, but humor and caring and also a discussion. At some point there needs to be a teaching episode about social interest, the capacity to develop ideas about fellow human beings, a sense of connectiveness, and how they keep us on the straight and narrow, or they keep us, when we care about fellow human beings, we care about their welfare. It, as I said earlier today, it just becomes hard to mistreat fellow human beings. And
it's also
we want
hard
to show them.
Crazy, Frank. You know, I also tell my patients it's impossible to care about other people and be crazy at the same time. So it's, not only won't you mistreat them, you won't mistreat yourself. If you're caring about other people, you won't mistreat them, and you won't mistreat yourself. It's just a perfect situation. It's a win-win on all sides situation to approach people with social, what you call social interest, empathy, caring, love.
Absolutely. And Peter, it's just simply true, because I've had the opportunity to see you do this. You just exude that concern for fellow human beings in various kinds of ways, but people who are listening who have seen you know exactly what I'm talking about. You feel, I'm with somebody who cares about me, and that just counts an awful lot.
Well, I had to do a lot of learning about that, as you point out. I came well fortified out of my childhood. It would be interesting to even try and figure out why, when I was 18, I went into a mental hospital, why I felt no difference between me and the other folks, and just thought, you know, wow, I could be me. That could be me. These people need some love and some concern. Maybe you and I will talk about that privately, and you'll help me see where I got that particular concept for a lifestyle. It wasn't yet a lifestyle, but it was a concept.
Yeah. Yeah.
Making it a lifestyle is a lifelong effort.
Well, I'm thinking you saw some things that you wished were not that way, or wish could be different, and you set about to try to make those changes.
Yeah, that is the essence of it. That is the essence. And it's such a mystery to me about how some folks go in that direction. They see the the abuse around them, they experience it, and they decide, I'm going to be really different than that. And that happens sometimes with extraordinarily abused people, people you would think would just come out full of hate, come out wanting to be good, loving human beings.
Yeah.
And other people go through abuses and even sometimes abuses that don't look so horrible.
Well, they
come out with resentment.
Yeah, I believe it too. This is so important, and to get that across to very depressed or suicidal people, especially it comes to mind. It's valuable for all of us all the time. But what I'm talking about is how I will absolutely build in with a suicidal young person, because that's part of what I operate in, with. And I didn't mention, but we had an award-winning teen suicide prevention video that's still available on DVD that won the highest award for non-theatrical films some years ago. But at any rate, what I wanted to say, what I'll get across with them, I hope, is that one of the most beautiful qualities of being a human being is that we absolutely choose our attitude towards every situation we face. And that's stunning. I don't want to overwhelm them. I don't want to moralize about it, but I am hoping to help them to realize that these are choices. And you can be very, very angry, vindictive, very depressed, but that's one choice. Now, I'm making it sound simpler than it is. You and I know that. But nevertheless, we want people to realize that. I just think it's the most beautiful quality of being a human being, Peter, is that we have that freedom to make that choice.
It's so well said, and it's just astonishing the correspondence between so much of what you're saying and what I believe, but a lot of it goes back to my own early decisions and yours too, but also my early exposure to Adler. As I hear you talk, I keep getting reminded the thoughts I thought were my own. I actually got from Alfred Adler. I have that experience all the time when I talk with Adlerians. I think, oh, I thought I came up with that in there when I was working clinically, and maybe I did for the second time, but I must have read it in one of those many books of Adler's, because it's right out of there. I think this is a really good hour, Frank. This is really gives people opportunity here, two psychologists, two people who are, you know, I'm a psychiatrist, obviously, but I'm fundamentally a psychologist right now, and we're talking, and to hear two really old-time, been around a while guys talking about the way you go about helping people and that it really works, and to hear you not backing down from working with suicidal people. We haven't discussed people who are, you know, hallucinating and so on, but you probably don't back down from that either, do you?
No, I don't get a lot of severely disturbed. I get a lot of suicidal, especially teenage suicidal youngsters. And, of course, the ADHD business that we've talked a little bit about, it's a big part of a psychologist's practice. If you work with young people, it's a big part of them.
Yeah.
And we haven't talked about how people want to believe that the answer is going to be it's going to be drugs. And without it, and I don't want to argue with them about that. All I want to do is say, let's take a look at the system, at the pattern of interaction in your home, and see how problems are solved.
Yeah. We're just about at the end. Really quickly, I can. 20 seconds. Did you at some point decide drugs were not the answer?
Oh, I did. People? Yeah, I did. Because even in the face of even dissent from the clients and others and school teachers and others. But when you, if you can take a look at day-to-day operations and hour-by-hour operations, and you can see how a young person is not learning to make part of his approach to life, concern for fellow human beings for various reasons, various mistakes.
Gotta end now. This is Frank Walton I'm talking to, a lovely human being, a great therapist. come here, Frank. Come hear me at Myrtle Beach the weekend of Saturday, September 28th. Frank, thank you so much for being on the show.
You're welcome, and thank you, Peter.